This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside. One, two, three, four. What is up, guys, and welcome back to Grit Grind Girona. Today's episode is again a very special one because I'm sitting down with not just one of the most exciting names in triathlon right now, but also a good mate of mine, Yuri Keulen. A lot of people always say Keulen or Keulen, but it is Yuri Keulen. If you follow the sport, you've seen him charge from being a wildcard to a win at the T100 in Singapore in last year. He's pushing limits on some of the biggest stages, and he races with heart and full commitment. This season, he demonstrated that he belongs on the biggest stage in triathlon. But behind all these results, there's also a guy who is honest, driven, and deeply grounded in what he's doing, even when the road gets rough. We'll be talking about pressure, passion, and what it really looks like to chase something relentlessly, all from a guy I've shared rides, laughs, and plenty of training with. Yuri, welcome in the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm blushing a little bit for an intro like that. You could have said as well, this is Yuri, mate of mine.
Would have also been funny though.
Actually, next time when I come to the pool or we go for a ride, I want you all the time to introduce me like
always
that.
Always like this?
Yeah. Applauding and making big scene.
we can think about it. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's hot in Girona at the moment, but yeah, I'm actually really enjoying my time. I think this is my favorite time of the year in Girona, and it's nice with the pool open. And sometimes training is a bit more difficult because of the heat, but mentally I always find it a bit nicer because, yeah, you don't need to think about what you're going to wear. Or sometimes when you wake up and the sky is gray or it's like raining for a couple of days, you feel a bit that kind of winter depression from everyone around you. But I always think that everything is a bit nicer in the summer. Yeah.
Well, I think this summer so far, it hasn't been like extremely hot.
We had 1 week of 40.
Okay, but I was not here, so I didn't know. But at the moment it's okayish. It's nice though.
I really enjoy it, and as well, I think they try to cool down the pool a bit.
Oh, it feels a bit finer,
which makes it a bit nicer as well to do hard sessions even on the middle of the day. It's funny because, we both are Dutch, and it's always funny, like, after June, half July, you always see, like, the orange number license plates from the cars.
Yellow
coming,
orange ones,
like,
yeah.
Coming as a big troop of an army coming towards the Costa Brava taking over. So then you really know, like, oh, summer is here.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it was finally time to get you in the podcast. Obviously, it was really easy for me to like ask you already as a first guest or these kind of things, but it's also cool to speak with you like in the middle of the season. I think you are somebody who doesn't do a lot of podcasts, so I'm really happy that you are in this podcast today. And obviously, as you said, we're both Dutch. We could have done it in Dutch, but I think there are a lot of like followers or listeners from you who not speaking Dutch, like to listen to what you want to say as well. So we're going to do it in English, obviously. And for the people who don't know this podcast, what we would like to do is first, get to know the guest a little bit. So we're going to figure out where you're coming from, what's your background story, and what you've done so far. And then, we're going to start it off with a round of quick fire questions. Then at one point, we are coming towards Girona. Obviously, we're both living in Girona right now, and we're going to have a quick fire questions about Girona as well. And I think after that, it's nice to look forward to what's coming up. There's a big race coming up in over 1.5 weeks, T100 in London. So we'll be looking forward to that and the rest of the season and future. So we're going to first start out with first round of quick fire questions. You ready?
Always.
All right. What is your proudest achievement in your sport?
I think that's quite easy. Winning Singapore last year.
T100 Singapore.
I think that was by far my biggest achievement than my best day in my career ever. Mm-hmm. So it's super easy to pick a result. But like every time I hear Singapore or someone goes to Singapore and tells me, I always feel like a little tinkle in my belly.
Mm.
Like that day changed my life literally in every single way. So
yeah. We're going to be talking about that for sure. What has been your hardest race so far?
Well, I think last year, Ironman 70.3 Switzerland. And that is a race that was really under the radar. But mentally, I was just coming off a block of racing. I won Singapore. And that was the first time that I kind of felt a bit in a hole in between races. And that was the first time that I really felt how deep my body actually went in Singapore. Mm-hmm. Like mentally, I was still quite okay, but I was so done. Like, my body was so tired that I made it to the finish line out of respect for the organization. But yeah, I rather forget that day.
What language do you speak?
Limburg.
So I knew you were going to say that.
Regional language, yeah. Which I'm very proud to speak because, so I'm from a part in the Netherlands that is 2 hours away from where Milan lives. Yeah. That could basically be another country. Some people say we have our own culture, our own traditions, our own language.
You have mountains, the place where I'm coming from. We don't have hills.
So if people ask me where I live, I always say, you know, the Amstel Gold Race. And then they mostly say yes. And then I say, yeah, that's where I live. English, which is quite funny because you have a podcast in English now, but I nearly failed my school exams on English.
All right.
And the teacher said to me, if you ever going to speak fluently English, I hope that day will ever come, but I'm afraid. And now I'm getting married to a girl who is Irish. I've tried to make myself understandable to other people in English.
Can you talk a little bit Irish?
Yes. I know some things in Irish, but they are like very little. So like Chocky Gora is... So in the 1980s, the Irish... fought against the British over their own country, and the Irish resistance, they had a quote always on their media and stuff, which called Chocky Gorla, and I think it's a very strong quote, and it means our day will come.
Okay.
And I think it's quite funny to say it in Irish when you're around Irish people because it has such a
meaningful thing.
Yeah, it's like such a, I don't want to say dark, but very, dark history, but I really, to be honest, think that it's such a strong quote. Like our day will come, like the self-belief in it and the resistance and the determination in it. I think it's quite a cool quote. So I speak fluently Irish. So that's basically it. I think if I'm in Germany and I'm there for quite a while, I will pick up some things from school, but saying that I can speak the language, that is a bit, I refuse to.
So might be that soon or whenever at the one point in your life you get the tattoo with the saying in Irish you just said, our day will come.
My day will come.
My day will come. This could be the one, the same as you talked about, but can also be something different. What is your most memorable finish line moment?
Well, it would be funny to say Singapore, but,
I don't remember that much of it anymore.
I think there are a couple of races that I really remember. So the first one would be Challenge Barcelona, where I outsprinted Alistair Brownlee. That was for me really a moment of like, okay, now I'm here. Like,
was it the end of 2023?
Yeah, season? Like, okay, I can fight in big races.
Yeah.
But I think one race before that was the 70.3 Worlds, and we went through a very difficult time as a family. My nieces my cousin from 5 years old, she passed away through a brain tumor the week before. And our whole family really struggled with that because that's such an awful thing in life. Like, there's no reason why someone so young needs to suffer and eventually die from a brain tumor. So I went to Lati 70.3 Worlds with a feeling of like, I do this for her. So I put a sticker on my bike and I came next to Sam Long out of the water. All due respect to Sam Long, but that's not the position I would come normally out of the water. And I had the sticker on my bike and I remembered so clearly that I kept looking at the sticker and I was like, I do this for her. So I wrote myself back into the top 10 and then I had the second fastest run split of the day and I got sixth. And that was for me really a moment that I thought like, okay, I'm actually quite good at this. And I do think I have a chance to make this my mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. Like I always had some good results once, twice a year, but never of that level mm-hmm. of like, yeah, I got top 15 in the PTO tour and stuff like that, but never really like knocked on the door, mm-hmm. as they say. So I think it's a combination of those two.
We'll be talking about it.
Yeah. As well.
Is there one person you look up to for inspiration? Or has there been?
Yeah, I think there's been. So I always look up to people that it's not one person in particular. Like it's not, I had a couple of idols that when I was young, I was like 10 years old watching mm-hmm. the telly. And very funny to say, but that was Usain Bolt and Marianne Vos.
Okay.
And that's very weird, but like I think Marianne Vos was the pioneer of women's cycling. And she was
she still won yeah. last weekend yeah, at the yeah, first stage of the tournament.
She was so good and she did everything on her own.
Yeah.
So I would say I really look up to people who are not taking no or stupidness as an answer and always want to like that just go full commitment into something and then work really hard and work their own way really hard and are not afraid to change any kind of way and then achieve what they have in their, like, I really like people who don't just do the talk, but as well deliver. I think that's something, like, for example, Usain Bolt, like, big, big show, but he delivers.
He delivers, right?
Yeah, so I think I really like people, like, that's where I look up to.
Okay. What is your dream race destination?
Spalbeek. So that's it's a joke, but that's my hometown and it's very, very small. We don't even have a lake or a pool.
Yeah.
But I think I would really like to like
a hometown race?
Yeah, Maastricht, like PTO or something in like Maastricht or
there used to be an Ironman in Maastricht. Yeah. Was that then?
I won it twice, but it was never at the location as that
the yeah, first. Yeah, the short like, short yeah, there. Yeah. Not the full, of course, but that must have been like the hometown race if you would have raced it now.
Really. Yeah, or I would really, really like to go like to these insane iconic places like Rio de Janeiro or like New York or something like that. Like,
well, who knows with the
C100 now? Yeah, right? Yeah, but like, but to be honest, I think that would never feel as like for you, Almere will always feel.
Mm.
Special, like no matter how often you do it, like you at every corner you have a memory.
Oh, I kissed my first girlfriend here.
I had a fight after a ball here.
Exactly. Yeah. What is your favorite movie?
Boah. I think the Harry Potter movies.
Harry Potter.
Then, especially 4.
All right, really.
Well, what do you think that?
I was thinking that you would answer a gladiator.
Oh yeah, but I think I have to say gladiator then maybe.
Yeah, maybe you're always talking about the Maximus Aurelius.
Yeah, yeah. I know quite a lot about the.
But also Harry Potter, and then especially the 4th.
Yeah, because it's like it's a cool movie. You can always watch it no matter what. But I think I've seen the gladiator movie like 15 times. Mm. Always get emotional at the end. Always doesn't matter when.
What did you think of that? The second we watched the newer one from last year. We watched it again
in the cinema. Yeah. Well, I think it's too much of a remake. Yeah. It could be more of a this is where we pick the story up and we're gonna create this whole new storyline. And now it's more like how can we follow the storyline of Russell Crowe and I think they could have done more with it. Nevertheless, it's an insane.
It's a good movie.
And we are all entertained, isn't it?
Is that something you got to say in your next race?
Yeah.
I get that at the finish line. Are you guys entertained?
And then I want them to call me Spaniard.
Okay. Well, you're a Spaniard now, though. Yes. You live in Spain. And I would like to say, besides maybe an Ironman World Championships in Kona, and actually maybe besides maybe Challenge Roth, like the two biggest races in triathlon, is there still a race you would really like to do?
Yeah, an Ironman.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I really would like to.
But is it like a specific one that you were thinking, oh, that's something on my bucket list or whatever?
I think the Norseman.
Okay.
And everything the Norseman does, I hate. I hate cold water. I hate shit weather. I hate climbing up very steep mountains. But that's a cool thing, isn't it? And I think slightly I'm looking forward to when my career is done to do like
crazy things.
Marathon de Sables or like not like insane things, but like those big community events where you like, I think an Ironman is nice and yeah, you can tell me more about it, but you're done in 1 day or 8 hours.
Yeah.
But a Marathon de Sables is six times.
If you watched the docu of the Belgian brothers.
Yeah. Or because I think, and I speak a lot with my mental coach about it as well, like, I think in the Ironman, you really learn yourself, like get to know yourself. But I think when you do events like that, you go into a way deeper level of like, who am I actually? Yeah. And I think that is, for us as athletes, being an athlete becomes your identity. And you try to do every day the best possible to get that identity more valuable and more worth it. And you connect yourself to great results. But I think sometimes the strength and power is as well in really finding yourself, but we get to that later.
What is your favorite sport outside of triathlon or cycling, running, swimming?
Well, I think for a very long time football, but as a young kid I played in different teams, different academies.
It was pretty close that you we're not even in triathlete right now that you were a football player. Yeah, because you were, as a young kid, pretty
Messi,
high up, eh?
Messi, yeah, you Messi is lucky. Like. Messi is really lucky I didn't come to the pitch. No, you kind of, at a young age, you kind of get a brutal way of how the football market actually works because there's so much money involved. And I think in Formula One even more, but like it becomes so much more commercialized even at a young age. But I have to say I'm slightly finding my way back into football again. Like, I think as well because it becomes more and more professional in like more at stake, less.
What's the team you support like the most?
Well, I think just a team that plays nice football. I'm not really having I'm a very neutral watcher of football.
It's a good way to watch
football. Yeah, but I kind of like the underdog story or the hardworking team to get with the win of the pitch. Like when a team wins too much, it becomes a bit boring. And but of course, in Anans, I support Fortuna, which is the local club who plays in the first league in Anans.
If you could train with any athlete in history, who would it be?
Lance Armstrong. And I know that's a very tricky one to say. But even now in the tour, like sometimes you listen to his podcast, like I don't want to say I want to be in US Postal or something, but I wish to be like that fly on the wall when everything was happening and just see like, okay, like what are you actually doing? Because I like the...
There are actually some good like videos or documentaries about that period with Lance and these kind of things.
But you know what I mean? Like, because it's such a black page cycling and sport in general. Yeah. Like everyone knows Lance Armstrong doping. That I'm very intrigued to see like
what happened really. What were they like?
And I have the feeling we only know half of it.
Could be.
And I just, I don't know. I just, Maybe who you like to train with is not the right answer, like not the right answer, Lance Armstrong. But I would.
Then was the answer. Yeah. Who would you want to be? Do you want to be a fly on the wall?
Yeah, I think you was postal camper. But to be honest, sometimes I'm saying that as well to my girlfriend and to you as well. Once in a while, like when Kipchoge did that 2-hour marathon or Michael Phelps swimming world records, or like sometimes I wish to be like. Boom, and you're in that race at that moment with his legs. I just want to know how it feels. Yeah. How does it feel to ride 500 watts for 30 minutes up a hill? Like, what does your body tell you? And like, I think I'm more really intrigued in like the surge of high performance. Like, obviously, I know a bit better than my brother and sister how it is for Pogacar to suffer on a climb. But I just really would be intrigued to figure out how it actually feels to swim 46 seconds in on 100 or run.
Well,
I'm gonna
say you one thing: we're never gonna make
that. No. But that's interesting thing. Yeah, like you're sure. So far away for from sure. It. Yeah. Like I just want to hear the sounds of the water in my ear when I'm swimming a 46. You know, like.
Yeah. I think I'm closer to a 46 on a 50 meter than I'm closer to 46 on a 100 meter.
Yeah.
Man, insane.
Yeah. If you swim at 30 flat,
basically.
And you swim at 0.100, you're closer to a 46 almost. Than
a. Who is the funniest athlete you know?
Poor. Well, that's difficult. Because.
Or who are standing out for you?
I can't really come up to a name because. A lot of guys or girls are quite funny in training, but then when it comes to racing, they're the complete opposite.
Or maybe that's a good thing.
So I would just like to say, I think with most of my training partners now and back then, we always had fun while training. Like back in the with the Federation, now with the guys from PTC, with you, there was always like that joke that keeps on repeating that. It's just an inside joke, but everyone thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
I think I would really say that is my definition of fun. Because on racing, like, yeah, you can be funny, but I just, like, it's not the time for it.
All right.
But I have to say, like, sometimes I can really laugh about, not about, but with Sam Long. Like, he's such an authentic personality, and I think we all need that in our sport.
Yeah. I've seen some funny footage of your guys, I think last year in like, what was it? Where was it?
Dubai.
Dubai.
With the traditional clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. But I think that is how it sums up because, yeah, Martin is really funny as well. And Mano is funny. Like in a group or in when you train so much together or for such a long time, you always need those characters, isn't it? Where they just make...
It makes the day just funnier.
Where you easier have, I can remember we went for 200k rides in COVID period, and it's awful and it's raining and just once in a while they just random sketch that they've seen on YouTube or on the telly, and they just throw it out and just that laugh for like half a minute makes it so much lighter. So I would say that I say more funny periods than actually one person that just jumps out.
Are you more of an early bird or night owl?
Definitely early bird. My brother is completely opposite.
Okay.
Like when we were swimming in the morning with the Federation and I had to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning with my bike to the pool, my brother sometimes came home from having a drink and we had breakfast together and he went to bed and I went to the pool. So that's the difference between me and him.
Different lives. If you could visit any country tomorrow, where would you go?
Japan.
Japan?
Yeah. I'm really... So Japan first and then flying back over Africa home. Because... So I'm really into cooking. I really like the... I just... Japan or Korea. I think that's really... Like it really pulls
Have you
me.
Been there with like the shorter distance stuff?
No.
Oh yeah, you told me last year that Thailand was the farthest... The furthest that you've been to the east.
Yeah, to Asia. So, I don't know. I have Japanese crafted knives in my kitchen, and I'm really, intrigued by how they make them. And
sounds weird because this may be a weird thing to hear, but like everyone knows Squid Game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
it's not Japan, huh?
No, it's Korea, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if it's North. It's South. Idea. South Korea, I think. I think it's not North.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just really, like the language and how clean it looks, not the game itself, but like everything around it. Like,
yeah.
I think the people are so nice and friendly, and I just, yeah, I don't know. It.
Sometimes to me, it's I've never been to Asia as well, but yeah. It's like we are used to Europe or US. Yeah. You've been there, I've been there, or Africa even. But it's the East is still
unknown.
Different world, totally different than we know.
Yeah.
Where you can still like discover or something.
Yeah, but I've seen crystal clear blue seas.
Yeah.
I've seen amazing wildlife in Africa. I've seen the In-N-Out and the McDonald's and the casinos. I've seen grizzlies or bears.
Mm.
But I've never experienced anything more than Thailand. And I think that for me, the real Asia is China, Japan. So I would really
there's actually not that much racing going on in like longer distance stuff, like half or 200 or full in that stuff. There are some for sure, but it's not.
But there must be a reason for it. I don't know what the reason is, but like, yeah, it's true. Like everyone goes to North America, Europe, some in South Africa, but no one really, or at least maybe we don't know because next week the World Games are in Chengdu.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is racing, but it's maybe less in spotlight.
We need to take a look at the calendar next
year. Yeah, Milan and Yuri go China or something like that.
All right. Let me see. Do you listen to any music or podcasts during your training?
Yes.
Not at all.
I do listen to podcasts and sometimes music. But when there's any kind of intensity, even if it's a little bit, I turn it off. Two reasons. I don't want my heart rate to spike on electronic music because then I'm faking my training.
Mm.
So if I have to run at, let's say, heart rate 160, but my heart rate goes 5 beats higher from Martin Garrix pumping through my ears, it's a bit faking the training.
Okay.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is, so I have ADHD and I'm very sensitive to...
This was the washing machine?
Yeah, dishwasher.
Okay.
So I have ADHD and I'm very sometimes sensitive to overstimulations of like when a lot is going on and when there's a lot happening around me. So sometimes I just want to focus on one sound. That's the sound of me running or the sound of me breathing. That calms me more down and gets me more focused in the moment. So when, let's say I'm riding efforts that are quite hard and Stormzy's blasting through my ears or any other artist, it kind of gets me out of a focus a bit that I want to be in to make the effort worth the best. So
interesting though.
Yeah, that's me personal because yeah. I know, for example, my girlfriend, she was an ex-pro. She's been in the podcast as well. She couldn't without. So she needed a playlist that she created with 3 songs on it on repeat.
3 songs.
For example, Martin is only listening to 1 song once or on a 3-hour ride on repeat. I'm not like that.
Wow.
I just want to hear and see what's happening.
You have your breathing on repeat.
Yeah, so that I'm breathing quite loud.
Is there a last question before we go further? Is there something maybe not China related or maybe not Asia related as you still want to go to? But is there something on your bucket list?
I think I have a lot of things bucket list related to the sport and to the life that I live now. But I think, and that this sounds very cheesy, but next year, Imogen and I are going to get married. I think that's definitely one on the bucket list of like marrying, the love of my life. I think that's something I really, really want to check off. On the other hand, I think as well, like, and this sounds very deep maybe, but, and I hope And I think we all would be very sad if that would happen. But if it would be done tomorrow, I'm quite happy with
what you've done,
like what I've done, how I feel, and like I have the chance to see and travel the world with my sport, and I live my life to the fullest without any regret of anything.
Yeah.
And I think for me the biggest bucket list check off is that I can just do whatever I want. I have my own, I'm my own boss. I can do really, really, really what I love. And of course, some sessions or some training or some periods sometimes feel like work, but it never really is. Eh? Jumping on a plane to go to an insane location, and I call that your job and making money of it. Like, I think that's the biggest bucket list check you can have. And everything besides that is maybe filling up that gap when you retire.
Yeah. Well, nicely spoken, right?
Yeah.
It's also that that you know that you're currently like living the bucket list thing that you want to do.
Yeah, but I truly believe that like some people are been born with an insane gift of like being insanely good in maths or having another very highly being highly intelligent and solving a cure for cancer or anything like that. But I truly believe that, and if I look to my school and everything, that I'm just made to be an athlete. Like, I have ADHD, which is my superpower in being an athlete. And then imagine having that and then being a trial athlete in training 30 hours a week. That's one big children's fest every single day of like, so
giving all your energy.
Yeah. I truly believe that that is what I've, where I've been put on this globe.
Okay.
For.
Well, let's talk about, the section that we just did was not really quick fire questions. I think it took us 20 minutes to get through all the questions.
What do you expect, mate?
But we had some really cool answers and for sure we already starting to know you quite well. Let me just and let's try to do it in a some sort of quick way because we still have a lot of things to discover. But can you tell me in a short while, like how did you start it out with triathlon, all the things you've done, like obviously starting out as a younger guy racing like the short distance stuff, until maybe your first try at the half distances maybe like the one in Maastricht and later on the Mallorca one. Yeah.
So maybe quite funny to say how I actually got into triathlon.
Yeah.
Very shortly, I was a football player, went through different academies, really enjoyed it. But I think, first of all, I was not good enough. Like, I think as a young kid, everyone has a dream to become a pro football player. And there are only 100 kids that actually get to the pro football field. I was not one of the 100. And
Messi's lucky still.
Yeah, pretty. And don't even talk about Ronaldo. So that next to that, I did athletics. Quite good at it. Just missed a little bit of a challenge. Signed up for a talent day. Got into the national team. And so I started triathlon.
What age were you in?
That was after 2012 Olympics London. So I was...
14, 15.
Yeah, 15. Ish. 14, I think. I couldn't swim. Not at all. I was like swimming 7 minutes on a 400 free in 25 meter pool, which was at that time way too far for being a serious contender for anything. Your local triathlon, I would not win it.
Mm.
But I really liked cycling and I was quite good at running. So I really wanted to develop in triathlon and pushed on the swim. And I worked myself up to quite an okay level of swimming. And then I got on the junior national podium, and that was when I really kind of kicked off. I qualified for the junior worlds in Mexico 2016, so 4 years later, and from that moment it really kind of started. Then I was like, okay, I have to take this more serious.
Yeah, traveling the world like that.
Yeah, like I was taking it serious already, but back then it was like, not serious enough, probably.
So I moved out of my parents' house at the age of 16. I started studying around Sittard, where the National Federation was. And I hold that up until 2021. I really enjoyed my time during COVID because I didn't have to travel and go everywhere. I could just train and enjoy myself and become slowly better and trying to create a bigger engine day by day, which I'm really thankful for now. But I really figured out in that COVID period, like, okay, this is really what I should do. Like, I love training. I'm missing racing, which is a good sign as well. So then after 2021, at the end of the year, I was quite sick. I got a lot of infections in my throat. A lot of things in the family happened. Grandma's passed away and my brother got into the hospital for, like, a lot of things happened and I just couldn't handle it anymore. So I needed a break and I needed to reset. So I came to a 2-week training camp in Girona and I never left. That's was 2021. I just never left. Yeah. I stayed here. I really enjoyed the vibe. I enjoyed the training. I found myself a new coach, which was the coach of Javier Gomez, Carlos Prieto. And I kind of surrounded myself with a bit of a team around me. So I started working a little bit with Costa Poltevets, the coach of Utah Leerdam. And he kind of pushed me to half distance. He said, just try it. It's a new sensation. It's a new bike, which can bring a lot of new things. Like, it's complete new then.
Was it, sorry for interrupting the... It's good how fast you go through the period because because we need to continue, obviously. But until this moment, you said he pushed me into like half distance. But until this moment, you have always been focusing on shorter distances, right? Was at that point on, it was always like the goal to go to Olympics and these kind of things. But yeah, there's obviously you've been not Asia again, but to a lot of places for the shorter stuff. What was your how good were you on the shorter stuff?
So I was in the picture for Tokyo 2020, but I just wasn't. It was just too early. I think I was very quite, like, they were quite expecting a lot from me on the relay, but I think I just, if I look back on it now, I was just not trained the right way. I think that's the first thing. Second thing is I didn't really understand my own body and had the experience that I have now to say, okay, but I want to do this. Or I feel I need to do that. It's very easy to look back and say, oh, we did this wrong and we did that wrong. But on the other hand, it kind of shaped me as well to the athlete that I am now. I do think that we did good things at the Federation, but I do think as well that I didn't got the maximum out of my short course career. That kind of forced me into a different direction. On the other hand, the training that I did there, I was like 20 or 19-ish there. And I was training the most hours a week of all of them. Not the most intensity, not at all, but like basically the most hours. So that kind of set me up for a good debut at a half distance. So yes, I was okay. But I always had that feeling of like, yeah, but what if I trained in the way that I trained years later? Or what if I got another opportunity? Or what if?
But then in, well, you already mentioned it, but in 21 or like in the winter 21 towards 22, you changed everything completely. As you said, you moved to Girona, different like coaching, different people in your corner. But you also mentioned like the move towards like some longer stuff. Was it not like an option to first try out with like different environment or setting and then continue with the shorter stuff?
Yeah, that was the first idea. But then I've run a 108 off the bike on a half marathon and that kind of triggered it a bit of like, hey, but what if I just focus a bit more on this, get a better bike, focus a bit more on the specific training, give myself a winter. And then see what it brings.
But was this the 108? Was this already the one?
In Mallorca.
Yeah, you did first hit the one in Maastricht.
Yeah, that was a 115 because I run the whole way with cramps,
right?
But yeah. I won that race. Obviously, not the way it should be because I was racing as an age group.
It was not a pro. But then shortly after, was this 2020 or 20? This was 2020, right?
2021.
Okay.
Because 2020 was still the COVID year.
Because the 108 that you're mentioning, the 108 off the bike was Challenge Mallorca.
Yeah.
I think I remember if correctly, you became fifth.
Yeah.
But with some really strong guys who are already like established themselves on the longer or middle distances.
Yeah. So that kind of triggered it.
Yeah.
Because first it was the plan of like, okay, let's just do something else. Do a different training, have a different approach. Get a bit lost in all the material that you need for a 70.3. Make a nutrition plan. Like, it's not like put one bottle in your bike, put a bit of sugar in it, and you're done with a sprint in an hour. No, it was like, for this, I really needed a plan, something completely off what I've been doing for a while. And I really enjoyed it. And then I thought, okay, what now if I go to Girona? And as well, financially, I made prize money for the proper prize money for the first time. So I was like, okay, what if I just focus for half a year on this? Just go through the whole winter. And then if I'm good enough, I'm probably making prize money and I can continue it. Always with the idea I would go back in 2024, hopefully to the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
But I just didn't ever felt like I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And then I raced.
I remember we've been training together in Girona since I moved here at the beginning of 2023. But even when you had some really good results in like the half distance, there was always here and there some like thoughts in your mind about maybe still give it a try or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Short distance. I still want to try.
Yeah.
One day. I still would like to like see, okay, with all the experience I have now on half distance, and what can my engine still do? And that can be like the local race in Banyoles, or that can be a World Cup, or Dutch Triathlon Federation sign me up for a World Series. No, I'm kidding. But like, yeah, or
it's not a closed short distance. Not a closed chapter. Still,
it will never be, because I think maybe doing an Eredivisie in the Netherlands, it's always good for half distance. Yeah. It will never be biting each other. But on the other hand, back to 2022, when I got fourth in Miami, I needed to keep doing that to get prize money, to keep funding myself and to make the next step in my career. And then, yeah, I was actually quite good at it.
Yeah.
And I kept going. And
2022 season was like your first real season you were focusing on like the middle distance. Immediately, really successful. Huh? The race in Miami. Then was it the win in the Switzerland race?
Yeah,
exactly.
Got first fifth at the Challenge Championship.
Yep, qualification for the Worlds was it St. George?
Yeah,
yeah. That was a big like step up from what you have done before. Right?
Yeah, but I think that year went really with trial and error.
Okay.
So I did really good things, and I really experienced a different way of training. But I made huge mistakes as well. Raced when I was sick, traveled when I was sick, did too much, too hard, too long, too far from home. And I really tried to balance and structure everything. But sometimes I think back and I was like, but how did I do it? And I think the answer on that is just, I just did it. I didn't really think about the consequences that I have now, in a good way, but as well in a bad way. So it kind of made that I was a bit burned out at the end of the year.
But I think you told me before that like this trial and error year, even though making a lot of mistakes as well, has like given you so much lessons.
Yeah, right? But that's with everything. Like even, so I always see it like you have 1 year of trial and error, and the next year you kind of harvesting what you see. So like the first year I went through a lot of tryouts, I didn't work, and then 2023 was quite a consistent and stable year. I won my first races against big names. And then 2024, yeah, obviously I got fourth and won Singapore, but then I came at a whole other level of like media involved, pressure, expectations. Like I was really there at the big hits. Like, okay, I can win a PTO tour, like what's next? But then you see you have to go through that year and experience everything on your own. And figuring out who and what you want to be at that level. And then hopefully the next year you can get that experience and be consistent on that level. So, yeah, I always see it as a two-year kind of loop.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I think we for sure would like to continue on the 2023 season and obviously the incredible 24 season you've had. But before we move on to that part, let's talk a little bit about you already mentioned you were moving to Girona in 2021 season. You've at the end of 21, you've like been here for a couple of weeks for training camp, different environment, and you liked so much that you decided to stay, right?
Yeah, I came with one small suitcase, and now we need a lorry if I move back to the Dallas to get all my stuff out. So
it's already
Nearly 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years. It's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
We start off with the quick fire questions about Girona. Well, first question is, since when are you living in Girona? It's end of 21. What is your favorite place to go for a coffee in Girona?
I think Espresso Mafia.
Okay.
Just chill, easy coffee. It's quick. Like, it's not like... Sometimes it's nice to go to a place for coffee that's not tempting for lunch. Mm-hmm. Or hidden is the same. So I like to go to a bit of a cafe and not to a lunch spot or a restaurant
kind of thing.
Because a coffee is like quick and easy, but sometimes if you eat lunch with it,
you'd be there for an hour.
Yeah. So I always try to meet my fiance after a swim for a quick coffee, or I go with you sometimes. We actually don't go a lot for coffee.
No, we're trained.
Yeah. But yeah, I think hidden or espresso.
Yeah. What is your favorite bike loop over here?
Montseny. Over St. Hilary, Montseny, and then 15-hour back home from
Sanselonzi.
Yeah. I think that's my favorite.
I didn't know you did it.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
One of my favorite loops, I think.
But like you do the big climb down then. Like
amazing descent from Montseny to Sanselonzi. Like that perfect.
I never done it that way.
Oh man, you have to do it on the
way. I always like to do around Montseny. And then Sanselonzi back, but you never.
Yeah, that's nice as well. To towards
almost a week.
Yeah. We once wanted to do that, and then we came at a cross, and there was like an insane car rally going on, but professional. So then we had to go all the way back, and a 4-hour ride turned into like a 6.5-hour ride. So we never went back.
But Montseny is nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, especially now it's quiet.
Some fuse over there.
Yeah.
Do you prefer running on the Vias Verdes or trail running on Elson? You don't do trail running.
No, I don't do trail running.
Isn't that something you...
No, I really don't. I really don't like that.
Okay.
It just goes too slow. Kilometers are not fast. Like, you constantly have to focus and think about it. Sometimes the nice thing of running is as well, like, just let's do a little podcast or just sometimes don't bring anything and just let your hat wander a bit with your thoughts and just come home with it.
Well, this question, I know the answer because we went together. Have you been to a Girona football club game?
Sí. Girona.
We should go again.
Because we didn't go last year. That's why they nearly
needed
kicked
our
out.
Cheering.
Yeah.
What is your favorite restaurant in Girona?
So, I have to say Bertali's.
That's almost like where you lived before.
Yeah, so I lived next to Bartali's, and we have a good relationship. I have a good relationship with the boys. Sometimes I see
the
them. With the lads. Sometimes I see them when running, but they recognize me from quite far. Even like it's quite funny. And then I see three guys passing in a Bartali's cycling shirt, and then I think, oh, it's the Argentinians.
Okay.
So I have to say. Yeah, I have to go for Bartali's. I think that's my... And I really like Royal Indian. It's an Indian takeaway and it never misses. It's always a hit.
I didn't try
it. Yeah, you should try it. It's nice. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides training?
Amy and I like to go to the beach. We don't really go a lot to the beach, but when we do, we really enjoy it.
Where do you guys go usually?
Tossa, or we went to a beach called Mungurik or something like that. It's around Caracas. That was nice. But to be honest, I really like to go for little walks with our little dog as well. And yeah, I think I have a really chill, easy, very quiet life. I'm not really someone that goes a lot to dinner or.
Well, you're. I wanted to say you're tired all the time because of training, but you've. Then I remembered you've got ADHD, never tired.
No, it's like superpower, mate. It's like, I don't know if the listeners know Asterix and Obelix.
Yeah.
I fell in super elixir as well. I got it running through my veins.
Yeah. Is there something you dislike about Jonah?
Yeah, the orange license plates in July.
The Dutch license plates.
Yeah. No, I think every city has its pros and bad things. I think, yeah, you can have the most amazing place in the world, but then people are complaining about someone being homeless, or like there's always something that you don't like. The only thing that I sometimes struggle a bit with is the holidays. There are so many holidays in Catalonia. It's insane.
On a random Monday, you think, let's do groceries, and everything is gone.
They have a holiday on Tuesday and on Friday, and they just say, you know what? Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, that's free as well. And then a whole week, something is closed without knowing it. So I think I sometimes struggle a bit with the holidays. Like, they always come when you don't need them. But maybe that's a bit selfish as an athlete who can fill in their own time.
What do you like the most about the city?
Just the options you have here, the riding. Like, we live an hour away from one of the most beautiful cities in Europe, Barcelona. We can basically say, let's go for dinner in Barcelona, and we'd be home before 10 o'clock in the evening, mm-hmm. and we had a nice day. Mm-hmm. Just the options for training is really nice. The environment for training, like a 50-meter pool nearly every day of the year open, where you have access to from 7 or 6 in the morning till 9 in the evening. The rides, it's quiet here on the road. The tarmac is super. I can go for hours on my TT bike, but I can as well climb, do big loops of climbing. Like, I think for an athlete, it's really, really nice and easy to live here. Especially a long-distance athlete who spends a lot of time
on a bike.
Yeah, and training.
Yeah, training.
I think it's the same for you, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I still live here after two and a half years.
Yeah.
Continuing on about the successes that you had late 2023, sixth place at the Worlds, a win in Challenge Barcelona, battle against Alistair Brownlee. That must have been a dream coming true, right?
Yeah.
Watching this guy, you know.
So it's funny, I started triathlon because of Javi and Alistair.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, they were asked by the PTO, what was your moment of 2024 so far? And they both mentioned my win in Singapore. And that was like, what is this? Like,
I remember you sent me the video, and you were like, what, they're talking like this about me? And
I started triathlon because I saw them doing it.
Yeah.
And then, so it all felt a bit like a blur. Like, I still have insane respect for the guys, and I know that I'm now a bit more personal, and I've seen them around racing, but like, yeah, I respect them a lot. And it was not that I won Challenge Barcelona, it was like I've beat Alistair Brownlee.
Mm-hmm. And what went through your mind, because obviously you were on the bike with him, you were running side by side for, it was a strange distance, it was like a shorter than a half, but for like 14 out of the 15K you were running almost side by side. Well, you guys were up and down a little bit. But what went through your mind running towards the finish line with Alistair Brownlee?
Well, for him, it would be another win. For me, it would be career changing.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I have it all in my own hands now. I can change my career here today.
Mm-hmm.
I worked so hard for this. Alistair had an amazing career, and he's my inspiration to become a triathlete. But for him, it would just be another win, and for me, it would be career changing. And I think sometimes these opportunities come towards you of like, it's a hit or miss. And I think you should always believe in the hit and not in the miss, if that makes sense. Like, at that moment, it was just not, it was not Alistair Brownlee, two times Olympic champ. It was just
another right,
my competitor.
Yeah.
And I was more thinking about, okay, I don't want to sprint with him. I'm very confident about my sprint, but it's Alistair Brownlee. So how am I going to do it? And I just picked up the pace more and more and more and more and more. And I just hope one time he would crack. And if not, then what's the worst thing? I got second behind Alistair Brownlee in the sprint. So I just went all in and he cracked. Oh. Not really, but he cracked a bit. And that was for me enough to win it.
So it was not only this win in Challenge Barcelona, was obviously just winning against Alistair Brownlee, but even the week after winning Challenge Mallorca. So two wins, again, Brownlee was there and other guys. But almost, I don't want to say out of nowhere, but that was like, must have been like the first moments, like big moments in your career, right? Like now, obviously the sixth in the worlds and these kind of things, but that must have been like, from that point on, you were really feeling like, I think I can beat everybody, right?
Yeah. At that moment, I was like it all went a bit in a very quick motion, because after six in the world, I signed my contract with my management agency.
Yeah.
And then I won those two races, and then you got offered contracts and stuff like that. Like, I never experienced that with wins. Something else comes as well. That was completely new for me. And with that something else, I mean sponsor contracts, I mean attention, I mean a name, I mean newspapers,
followers,
like, but negative, positive media, like all of that. So it is more something that, like, if there's a young athlete on the other side of the table who goes through the same, there's just one thing that you should say to them is just experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Try to stay calm, but you just have to
get through it.
Really have to go through that phase of like I would really want to say enjoy it and just try to be, take the most out of it, but just stay calm on the same time. But it's something that really happens natural, and it's not like you can recreate. The only time you can recreate that is just by winning races. So it was the first time that I experienced the consequences of me winning races in a good way and in a not so good way. But yeah, I'm very happy I went through that.
Yeah. 2024 was the first year 200 came with the series, right? And winning these races, finishing sixth in the world. I think you were like standing 20th or something like this on the PTO rankings. 17th, yeah. Something like this. And I remember that for the whole winter, you were not sure about getting the contract for the year, for the series. And then eventually you ended up not getting one of the 2020 contracts. But for the whole winter, I remember very close, even after your last race in 23, I remember you were talking about first PTO race, first 200 races of next season. I need to be as good as possible. I'm not gonna have a big, big recovery after the season. I'm gonna go through the whole winter, train like a maniac, and be as good as possible in those races. And eventually, you ended up getting the wild card for it was Miami.
Miami,
I think March 2024. And yeah, you came there 2024, and you finished fifth, sixth,
fourth.
Same.
So it was.
Yeah.
Ditlev, Long, Mariemi, Brownlee, Manu.
Yeah. Like, at that point on, that race was, because it was the first one in the season, whatever. It was at that moment was everybody was looking at this race, the whole world was watching, and then as a wild card, you finished fourth. That was crazy, right?
Yeah. Well, so that was funny. That was a funny winter, because I think I told you as well, they offered me a contract. They are talking about a contract. And in the end, I didn't got it. So, but what they said to me as well is start list goes on ranking. And then I figured out that two guys were not racing. So I knew I was
selected to race.
I was probably racing.
Yeah.
So I decided with my coaching team at that time, like, we just have one hit. If we just have one good race, we're in for the next one, and then we have one more shot. So we need to make sure that the first two races are bang on. Yeah, I got fourth, and I was kind of, I don't want to say disappointed. I was happy, but I was like, oh, I have more in me. With this and this a bit changing and a bit more of like, a bit more luck and a bit more opportunity, yep. I can maybe get on the podium. That's how I felt. But I knew that after the race, the CEO of the PTO came to me and asked directly, you want to race Singapore? And I said, yes.
So, how do you call it? Like, objective completed.
Yeah. Yeah. So first step done. But then I knew like, okay, if I get 15 in Singapore,
I'm off again.
Yeah.
You, as a wild card, you need to.
Yeah. Like, you need to perform. Yeah, and then I thought the only option to that is podium. So we looked at Singapore and we thought like, okay, how are we gonna achieve that? Like, how can I try to maximize my chances of having a good result 9 out of 10 times? Mm. Or how can I maximize my options, basically? And I remember that in the winter, I was looking at the race in Singapore on the live stream when I was on the turbo, and I said to my fiance, like, that is the first race of the tour and I have to be good at that one. So I analyzed the race really well. And then we came to the conclusion that we need a heat prep, and a brutal heat prep as well, to make sure that I will come to that start line completely acclimatized, completely knowing like, this is what my body can do in the heat. So I just looked up worst place to heat prep around Singapore, and that was Thailand, Phuket, in March, May, yeah. Of March, April.
So very close after Miami.
Yeah, yeah. So I was home for a week, and then we went to Thailand for 2 weeks. And basically what we did there was just getting used to the circumstances of the heat, like figuring out what does it really take to do a race here. And what do I really need to do to achieve what I want? So, and it's a bit tricky. This was a bit tricky because we went to the times of Blumenfeld and who won the year before. And we just looked up what were his splits. And we just tried it out in training. Can I do this? And I figured out I was pretty close to that. Mm. Difficulty in that is that his race was in August and my race is in April. But we thought, if Blumi can do it, I can do it. Mm. Like, if Blumi can do that, then it shows it's possible. And I just try to match it. And then if I can do that, and if I can achieve on race day what he does with the numbers, I think I can get quite far on the podium. So we started working with the data that we got and the data that I wanted to collect on heat prep and everything. And bit by bit, we kind of figured out that I was actually good in the heat. And then I lost a lot of minerals and or a lot of sweat, but not a lot of minerals and not a lot of sodium and stuff like that. So we started working on a nutrition plan and on a plan of cooling. And I came to that race in Singapore knowing, okay, this is exactly how far I can go. And I was just on the bike and I had a lot of marsh left on how far I could go. And I thought like, oh, it would be cool to lead a T100 once. Mm. Never the intention to break away. And I just thought, I have more in the tank. So I'm just going to try and set the pace and see what happens. Yeah, and then I was up for 2.5 hours solo, which I didn't expect. Yeah.
What was it again? How many like minutes, 4 seconds you came off the bike solo?
1:15.
1:15. And nobody saw you anymore, right?
Yeah,
that's basically it.
That was quite.
We can't talk long about it.
That was. But I remember I came off the bike and my legs felt quite good, and I was like, oh, I just really have to do this now.
Yeah.
Like,
this is it.
This is all I've worked for. This is where I do all the sacrifices for. Like, just try to bring it home. But I know as well. The first thing I thought as well. Nothing crazy. You don't need to run the fastest split. You just need to run 1:15. You just need to stay 1 minute and 15 ahead of the guys behind you. And
I think only Sam Long came really close, right?
Well, no, yeah. But he was running faster than me on that day. But then I've heard from my coach on the side that I was actually gaining time. And then I was like, oh.
What's happening?
What is going on? And I just tried to execute my race plan as good as possible. But breaking away was definitely not in it.
And, you managed to, like, pass the finish line in first.
Yeah.
PTO win to a Singapore win to, again, all of the triathlon world was looking at this race. And you finish it as first place. Pretty insane, of course. You yourself can't remember that much of it anymore. You passed out after the finish as well. You spent hours after it in the hospital, right? I remember FaceTiming you half. You didn't even know what to say, but you were like half passed out in the hospital. What happens after? And again, you already won the races we talked about in Barcelona, Mallorca, and you finished fourth in Miami PTO. But winning a PTO race is something next level, I think. And what happened after? It's like mentally, physically. You touched on it a little bit already, like at the beginning of this podcast. But suddenly, a lot of things happen, right?
Yeah. So basically, what happens is you have a dream as a kid, or as an athlete. When you come at a more higher level, you start dreaming about winning big races, and I won, like, the lead up towards the race in Thailand as well. I was thinking about winning, but I was never like, it was always like,
you never did it before, so you.
Yeah, I was always like, boy, imagine I would do that.
Yeah.
Or imagine I win. And then you have all of those thoughts in your head, like, oh, I want to celebrate it like that. And when I do this, then everything is there and this and that. And then you do it and it's nothing like it. Mm. It's beautiful, don't get me wrong. And I would love to do it every single time. But you're not prepared for something like that. Only when you've done it multiple times, you know what's coming. But I think my first win on that big stage with so many media and opinions and feelings and sensations around it, I think that, like, as we said, I really had to be good in those two races, and I really focused on Miami and Singapore, and basically after that it was like, yeah, now I want to win the series. Mm-hmm. But I had no idea how to, and I had no idea what, and I had no experience on media, I had no experience on social media, gaining followers, people having an opinion on you, my parents getting asked things at the supermarket about me, seeing myself on Eurosport commercials, like, that's something you can't prepare for. Like, it would be very funny if you would prepare for that and then try to win a race that you never won, you know? Like, well, I'm going to prepare with my mental coach, everything that comes with it, but I've never done it. Like, now I know that if I win London, hopefully, or I'm going to try or at least do my best, that I know that I need to call with my mental coach, sit down and talk about all the sensations and start from zero again the day after or the week after. But back then it was like, yeah, I achieved this dream, and who do I actually want to be in the media? What do I actually want to show the people? Whom am I in this all? I come at this new level and I try to figure out my identity at that level. And yeah, all of a sudden I'm having meetings with brands about personalized things and about money that I could never imagine, and all these new things. Like, I'm not only talking about the money side of it, but I've never had any experience with taxes or an own company or sponsor deals that have to come through these kind of ways, or so it was all new. And sometimes I wish that Singapore was at the end of last year, so I had the whole winter to go through this, but in the middle of the season.
Like you just said, I wish that it was at the end of the year, because now you were actually at the beginning of your season.
Yeah.
But after such a high, like winning at 200 in Singapore, end of obviously the fourth already then, but you were even leading the 200 series at that point. You were number one, right?
Yeah.
But after that, you were struggling.
Yeah. I was just really struggling at, like, first of all, in my head, it could only go wrong in a way of, like, if I don't win, it's not
good enough.
Not enough. And I think at that moment, I kind of missed someone around me that said, okay, stop. Mm-hmm. We're here now. You're leading the series. I was still not sure if I could race every race of the series because
you had wild cards.
Yeah, and as well, I was afraid that what they'd done in January about offering me a contract and not getting it, that would be something like, oh, you can race, and then, oh, no. So it was every time waiting, get in the race, waiting, get in the race, prepare. Yeah. And I just had so much to deal with that I just had to figure out. And I think that's a part of my ADHD as well, that it all feels super intense and it all feels like...
And it all came at once.
Yeah. And I didn't really know... I think that was the big thing. I didn't really know whom I wanted to be in this hole. And how can I make sure that my mental happiness is always priority? Like I know I can train hard and I know I can do the right things in training, but I think the most important thing is to get me happy and then I can train hard and do the right things. But if I'm not happy, it just doesn't get into it. And
well,
I think
what's the thing that they say? A happy athlete is a fast athlete.
Yeah. Right. But I think now as well, like, I'm experienced that my happiness and mental health is the first and most important thing before anything else. Yeah. Like, I need to prioritize that. And luckily, I have an amazing fiance who helps me with that. But as well, like, started working with a mental coach that is the absolute best for me. And that really keeps me mentally on track. And that checks in with me every once in a while, like every 2 weeks. And we have discussions and chats about everything. Mm-hmm. About how we should name our bike to... How can I handle this situation in a race? Or how can I make sure that I'm getting fully charged towards a race and not empty?
Is it, as you're talking about right now, if you wouldn't have somebody like this, it would be really much like harder for you, I think, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to give her the credits that she deserves. So I'm together, working together with Josephine Perry. She's a British sports psychologist specialized in professional athletes with a little sidestep of ADHD. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about this all. I just sent her an image and I sent her an email, hey, can you help me? And she was my knight in shining armor.
Okay.
When I've heard that she worked with people with ADHD and basically what she does is, like, I came to her with an empty toolbox and every session she just adds a tool to it. She keeps adding a tool and slowly I'm getting into situations where I'm like, oh, okay, we spoke about this, we prepared this, I'm confident, I'm not failing.
Mm-hmm. I need to do this
I've handled this well and now I'm gonna make sure that, let's say my energy is 100%, I'm not giving you 5, I'm mm-hmm. giving you 2 because I want to race well and I want to save 3. So yeah, we really work on that and I'm really happy that because of that win, a lot of other things came in motion. And I'm not disappointed about my year last year because, yeah, I won Singapore, got 4th, and I got twice 9th.
You finished 9th or 10th overall?
8th.
8th overall. Okay.
And I got into a series that I was not supposed to be in at the beginning of the year. Yeah. And I was leading it and I won it. I got 3rd on the world ranking at one moment, so mm-hmm. I can't be disappointed about that. But it's just something you need to go through and experience, I think. And at the end of the year as well, like, I was sick for 2 weeks because I was kind of burned out.
Yeah.
But it gave me a lot of confidence as well in, like, doing the right things and finding the right path. And it really figured out as well what I didn't want more than what I actually wanted. But sometimes it became more clear, okay, I don't want this. And now I'm going to figure out what I want.
but at least I can check this off. And this is who I don't want to be. And slowly and through the winter as well, I started to figure out what I and who I wanted to be at this level. And
but you changed, you changed a lot over the winter.
Yeah, I changed coaches. So I was working with a coaching staff of four people, and I'm super thankful for them. Mm-hmm. Swim coach, bike coach, run coach, and a guy who managed to try to stay in between. Super thankful because they brought me to the level where I was. But it was just really tiring and difficult at the end of the year to keep managing all three disciplines from three different coaches and trying to stay on top of communication and everything. So I wanted to have a coach that was close to me, as Glenn Polonis from PTC Coaching is now. He's on the side of the pool. He's with bike sessions, he's with their run sessions. And I just wanted to have a coach that controls it all. And just let me do my thing in the pool, on the track, and on the bike, and just trust completely without asking myself if I'm doing the right things.
What are the things that changed most for you?
Just rest in my head. Just a calm, nice, safe environment that I can try to execute myself the best in, and trying to like. What Glenn really does is trying to change my mental state in a good way. Mm-hmm. So he picks things up about me in training, like, oh, you're a bit rushed or anything. I think it's because of this. Maybe you should talk with Josie about that. And slowly we're building step by step by step.
It's interesting that you said this already, because you're working not for a long time together.
Yeah, but I think that's Glenn's one of Glenn's strengths.
Okay.
Of like, he really sees the personality things in people. And I think as well, he's just not like some coaches see that as a difficulty of like, oh, this guy, he's annoying me. But Glenn really sees it as like, okay, how can I change and make sure that that part of the puzzle is complete as well. And then I think I'm a really open book. I think you can read everything off my face, and I think I'm not afraid to share my emotions. And I think with that and working with Josie is a huge step in my development as a human, in always towards my relation, towards my friends, towards my parents, being an athlete, towards the media, towards fans, towards everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we basically figured out that the question I had, who am I and what do I want to be, and the answer on that is that I am enough as I am, and I don't really need to change to be something that I don't want to be. I just need to be myself and be the Yuri that I am. And I change things in the best of me and not because other people expect that from me. I think that's the most important thing. I think having peace and ease with that, of that people have opinions, that people do think things about you, and that you can't always be everyone's friend. I think, and that I'm enough to be in the tour, and that I'm rightful to be in the tour, and that I'm capable of doing extraordinary things, but that it doesn't always have to, but it can happen. I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, that's something to think about, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's nice to say. Yeah, but the change towards this new training or like coaching environment has been pretty successful so far, right?
Yeah,
it has been a good season so far.
Yeah.
We're still like, well, I want to say halfway, but the time flies so fast as well.
Yeah.
You've done three races?
Yeah.
Three races. First two were pretty good.
Fourth and seventh.
Yeah. Third was not amazing.
Yeah, so I broke my bike in San Fran.
Yeah.
And I kind of messed up a bike position a little bit. And the course in San Fran was not something I would really feel that at. But then in Vancouver and the training part in between, I just got a bit inflamed in my lower back. And it started to become really painful. And I just couldn't produce the power and the physical demanding that it was needed on that race.
To before like the training weeks or like the whole time that you were gone from Girona for people to understand what needs to be done to be like at this top shape or this as good as possible in these races. You were gone from home from Girona for about 10 weeks, right?
Yeah, so I left the 20th of March and I came home the 25th of June.
Crazy. And in between only like two days here in Girona.
Yeah.
Yeah,
crazy. Yeah, but yeah.
Altitude, racing, training at a different location, racing takes a lot out of you, right?
Yeah, but sometimes you just have to keep it simple and just don't think too much. Just do it. Like, you commit to this dream and you commit to chasing, in my opinion, I'm trying to chase the best I can be. Just like, don't really think about it. Mm-hmm. It is something that happens, and it is like, as well, like I experience now as well, and I catch myself on it sometimes as well, that I'm stressing about nothing, or that I stress about things that I can't change. But I've learned as well that there's no such thing as perfect preparation. When athletes test me like, oh, I had the perfect preparation, everything went right, I always think like, yeah, but you're fooling. Mm-hmm. Just be honest.
Everybody has their things.
Yeah, everybody has its things. So, I've learned that as well with Josie. Now it's like, we just need to work with, like, nothing is perfect, but sometimes you just don't need to. Like she always says, if you can't go around, if you can't go over it, if you can't go under it, you just have to go through it. And sometimes perfect is as well just good enough on the day and becoming fifth and not winning it. Mm. And I think that's what I really try to chase now. It's like, I just gonna try to execute my best race on the given day. And in Singapore, that was enough for the win. Yep. In London last year, that was enough to become nine. And in Miami, it was fourth. And if that is given on that day, the only thing that I know 100% sure is that I'm gonna go full gas 100%. And just sometimes, yeah, you win, and sometimes
other guys are stronger. Right?
Fourth is a win as well for that day.
What are you currently ranked in the series? You know,
sixth, seventh. I don't really know, because some guys have four results already, and some two, some only one.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit of a
mix of everything.
Yeah, I think after Frisur it will be more clear where you actually are, because most of the guys have four results in then.
So you've got in 1.5 weeks from now, you've got 200 London coming up. What's coming after for you?
I go on altitude camp for 3.5 weeks to Fogomir with the group. And then I race Valencia and Wollongong. And after that, we decide where we are in the series. Is it needed to go to Dubai or not? And if so, what is the cost of that? Yeah. So I know, I don't mean financially, but like, what is the mental and physical cost of going to another race and being away from home again? Or are we good enough and can we focus on
the final?
The final, and just try to hit it with a big bang. A big bang before Christmas.
Yeah. Even though you've now, as I said, we are already halfway at the season and you've done, well, only three races, more than me actually. But there's still so much coming up, huh?
Yeah, it's mostly a lot of traveling, huh?
Traveling, but true.
So Vancouver, San Fran, and Singapore are all more than 10-hour flights for us.
Yeah.
So it's nice to stay a bit in Europe as well, but then, yeah, things change and you have to go to Wollongong, which is the biggest travel of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But cool though.
Yeah, before you know, the leaves are coming off the tree.
Yeah. It goes faster. Yeah, but I'm already looking out of the window and it's dark already.
Yeah, look at us. Next time we're sitting here on the balcony having a beer and the kids are running around in the garden.
When
daddy was doing triathlon.
What do you expect? London?
That's difficult to say.
Yeah.
What I expect, and this is very cheesy, is the best of myself on the day given. So
But I have the feeling you're in the you're in the right, how do you say it, in the right state of in the right mindset or right headspace. In the right place, headspace, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, 95% of the time. Yeah. I still do feel, like last year I felt like I was a lot under high pressure of like winning and media and everything. This year is definitely less and I can handle it better. But sometimes when things happen that are not perfect in my head, I start to spiral a bit. And because I'm not all the time under stress, it always feels like a little bit of a spike. Because last year I was all the time under stress and then it's just a little bump. But now because it's overall way more flat and relaxed, I always feel that. Like I'm more aware of what's happening.
Yeah.
And that gives a lot of more calmness and chill feelings.
Something to look
yeah.
forward for upcoming races.
Definitely.
Well, man, we have been talking for a long, long time. Already 1 hour 25 we're in. And we could probably talk for much longer as well, but it's already getting late and we need to finish things up. I've got a couple of like follow-up questions from our Instagram. People sent some questions in that we can quickly go through before we are wrapping up. First question, when first full distance?
So to be honest, it was planned the 24th of August Ironman Switzerland this year. But after Singapore, I crossed the finish line and I thought like, no, this series needs 100% dedication for me to stay in it. So I'm not going to take the risk and do full distance. But then actually a PTO made the choice for me in changing the calendar, which kind of made sure that I couldn't do a full distance this year. But definitely next year. I have a dream that's called Kona, so definitely next year.
Interesting. What do you prefer, heat training or altitude training?
Heat.
Heat training you prefer?
100% heat.
Why?
I think it's, I don't want to say hidden talent, but I think it's one of the things that I'm maybe a bit better in than others. I think with altitude, it's sometimes less in your own hands because the circumstances are so different. And if you push a bit too hard, like it's more fragile.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it's more on the edge.
Well, you were for 5 weeks in Sharjah and you got sick and then this and then the weather and then...
And mostly with heat, it's good weather. So the chances of getting sick is less and there's less pressure on your... On your breathing system of like getting nose blocks or lung issues. So I would definitely say heat.
If you had to choose, which one would you choose? Duathlon or aquathlon?
Definitely duathlon. Why would you swim for fun?
I don't know. What did you do in the Netherlands last week for only 2 days?
Who asked this? So I went to Almere. Oh,
why did you go to my place though?
I went to Alkmaar to the track. Okay. I did some aero testing and got a new setup for my handlebars.
Cool.
So nice.
Somebody asked, I don't know if you're going to answer, but somebody asks, because you were very proud about it, what your CDA is.
It's quite a bit higher than Remco.
Okay.
But I was quite proud of it. Okay. Yeah. It's under 20. Or on the 0.2.
Yeah. Why are you such a good chef?
I think for us as athletes, food is really important. And I don't want to call myself a good chef because let's be honest, if I have a restaurant, no one is coming. But I just really like to make food. It's nice because you start with nothing and then in the end you have a result. And the nicer it is, the better the result. So it's a bit, it's just therapy. Okay. In a nice way. Like I really like to get inspiration and lose my head a bit from the day-to-day training and the day-to-day things of as an athlete about nutrition and all the stuff that you need to do as an athlete.
You get it a little bit from your father, right?
Yeah, my dad has always been a chef, but he slowly starts to say that I'm outcooking him now, even if he doesn't admit it, but he knows it. If you have a cook-off at the barbecue of someone. Oh man, I'm coming for him.
Next question is, well, I only know of two people, but why are there so many triplets in triathlon?
I have no clue.
And that's probably you and Sam Long.
Me, Sam Long, I think Holly Lawrence.
Okay.
As well. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't know neither.
Maybe because it's three sports.
Yeah, three.
We, you know that we all change. Okay. Like, it's actually my brother who bikes and my sister who runs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Why is your nickname Boquito?
It's not really my nickname, but Glenn likes to call me like that. There's a story about a gorilla once escaping in a zoo in the Netherlands. And I was really proud telling them how that happened. And Glenn said, "You look like one." And then we were doing a session in Canada, and I have quite narrow hips, but I have quite muscly legs. And Martin was saying, "It looks like I'm sitting behind the gorilla." And then Glenn said, "Oh, it's Boquito from last night." And then I got called Boquito. But it's not really my nickname.
Right. So don't say Boquito next time they see
you. Oh, you can say Boquito, but it's like, it's not such a funny story for Boquito himself, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah. As you mentioned that you think everything through before races with your mental coach and all these things. But is there also a possibility you will do a race like purely on feeling and not think about it too much on forehand?
I'm not racing with any data on my race.
Okay.
I raced Singapore this year without power meter and I run without watch. Sometimes I come in transition, I'm like, nah, I don't feel like a watch and I just go on feeling.
Okay.
On training, it's quite funny because on training I'm pretty perfectionist. Like, I really want things to be perfect. And that's sometimes an issue as well because things aren't perfect. But besides that, on training, like on racing, I nearly never look at my power meter. I just know this is what I can do and this is what I should do.
Yeah.
In Singapore as well, when I broke away, I turned off my power meter. I was like, no, I need to hold it together. Mm-hmm. The power meter can tell me whatever it wants, but I need to hold it together.
Yeah. Last question, and this is also I think a moment or period which was really tough, but you had some like negativity around you back in 23. A lot of people like having some negative comments or news, these kind of things. At this moment in time, and maybe even looking back at this, what did you really think about this topic at the time?
Well, in one way, the winner always like takes it all, you know. Like when you win a race, it's always people have opinions about it.
Mm.
One thing I really know is that I would never comment on it. But the hard truth is, it's difficult to handle. Like you win one of the biggest races in your career on the way that I really wanted to do it, and then people have opinions about that in a negative way and blame you, whatever. And that's part of the difficulty last season as well. Like the next half, not only physically but as well mentally. And then we come back to the part where I said like, what womb do I want to be in? What do I want to be in? Who am I? And then the answer is I'm enough. And people can say, and like, you can't change people's opinion by blaming them for having an opinion. The only way to change people's opinion and to change the narrative around you is just to be yourself. That's the first thing. Second of all, just to perform. Yeah. And I really think that if you see what people said last year about me and what they think about me now, I think
after the idea that the how do you say it, like narrative or the whole picture or idea, it's turned around a little bit. Eh?
Yeah.
Definitely. In the good way.
Yeah, luckily. I think people saw that the person that some people in the triathlon world sketched about me is not the one that I really am.
Yeah.
And I think it's not the one that is sitting here in the evening on the couch. And I definitely don't think that that's the one that how I handle fans or people can come whenever they want to me before a race, after a race, to have a picture and have a chat. Mm-hmm. And I always find that super special that people come to a race to watch me race. Like,
no.
That is something I can't believe. So the only way to change that is to be truly Yuri. And I am enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I keep reminding myself that, I stay away from being someone or something that I don't want to be. Because the person that I am and the person that I want to be is hopefully the same person.
Yeah. Nicely said. I think it's a good way to finish this long recording of our podcast. I always like to end our recording with the final question, and that is, well, you're still a young kid, you're still a young guy, but what is the one thing you would want to say to your younger self?
Gas geven. That's Dutch, that's regional language for keep going.
Keep going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, keep your head down. Just, I am enough. I would like to say that you are enough as you are.
Well, again, I think nicely said. And well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been, again, a really long listen for people if you're still listening to it right now. But I hope you enjoyed our time in this podcast together. I obviously enjoyed it quite a lot. I mean, I know you quite well already, but still, it's always interesting to dive deep into these things you don't talk about every day, I think. And well, I think people have gotten a really, like, maybe a new or maybe a different view about you now. And I think it's only a positive thing. And I'm really looking forward to watch next week, London, watch your other races for the year. And obviously, well, as I said, you're still a young kid, so there's still a lot of years in the sport left. So I'm also looking forward to the moments in time you are going to, like, put your foot into some first full distances. And it's going to be cool.
Would be cool to be together on the bike.
Yeah, maybe. 1 point.
I give you the bottle. I give you a bottle. I can give you a bottle. I can't take a bottle.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, thanks so much. It's time for us to wrap this up because it's pretty late already. Thanks so much again, and see you guys in the next Grit Grind.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.